As Maine's craft brewing industry continues to grow, so do the number of women making it happen. Archaeologists and historians who study this kind of thing say the vast majority of ancient brewers were women. In fact, that's where the term alewife comes from. Well, they don't call them alewives anymore, and most are not selling beer out of their homes. But in Maine, there are a lot of women making beer, opening breweries, and building the industry. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk to some of these modern-day brewsters about the growth of brewing in Maine and whether the woman's touch makes a difference. We'll also learn about the intersection of Maine breweries and agriculture. Have you always wanted to be part of the craft brew industry? Do you think it has a dude reputation? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Historians trace the first fermented beverages that resembled beer to several millennia ago. And from the beginning, women were the ones making the beer. They were later called brewsters and alewives. And until beer became more tied to commerce and became the domain of men, it was women who brewed beer as a beverage for their families or to sell. Today, we tend to think of drinking beer and making beer as a male-dominated pursuit. But not only do women often enjoy drinking beer, they are involved with making it, selling it, and promoting it. And here in Maine, the rapidly growing beer industry has more and more women behind its success. Joining me now in the studio to talk about this, Kate Cohn. She's a freelance writer and author of the book What's Brewing in New England, a guide to brew pubs and microbreweries. The second edition of the guide came out last year. Lisa Kellendorfer is assistant brewer at the Austin Street Brewery in Portland, and Heather Sanborn is co-owner and director of business operations at Rising Tide Brewing Company. She is also a member of Maine's House of Representatives. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you know of women involved with Maine's growing brewing industry? Do you have questions about what goes into making local craft beers? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. Great Friday program as we all look forward to the weekend. Kate, you wrote about New England's breweries first more than 20 years ago, and now you've done it all over again. A lot has changed. What's the beer scene like in Maine today?
I think the biggest changes I saw, there were three things that we didn't really have back in the 90s. When I worked at Shipyard, we didn't have social media. People were just getting email, and remember dial-up? You had to have a local phone number, so you didn't pay all those exorbitant long-distance calls. And a lot of people weren't very good with their email. So social media makes the beer industry, anything they put out is immediate. A new beer they're brewing, an anniversary, an award they've won. So it gets in front of more people. The beer bus tours weren't around, and they're a lot of fun. I was able to hit a lot of different breweries in one day and meet the brewers and taste the beers. And where's my third note?
How about the number of breweries?
The number. Forget it. Even in my old book, I was just looking at the introduction. There were 1,000 breweries in the country when I wrote this book in 96. Are we at 5,000 now?
More.
It's like nuts. So every once in a while, I'll get on the Brewers Association website and see what they have nationally. And then we have a Facebook group, Maine Beer Media, and a couple of really great people, Carla Lauder and Josh Christie, try to keep track for us. So I think Maine is up to 89, depending on who's got their licensing. Sometimes they're not open, but they haven't brewed yet, or they have their licensing and that sort of thing.
I have in front of me a printout from the Maine Brewers Guild. Mm-hmm. And this says, as of January 10th, Maine is home to 93 active breweries. But the 89, 93, because a couple breweries have more than one license, I think.
Okay.
But this is what's interesting to me. 1994, 11 active breweries.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're debating whether it's 89 or 93.
I know. There were six in Portland. I just was looking at my book. It was a little easier to track because they weren't opening as quickly, although it had started to. And it was crazy. I think there were 25 in Maine back then, according to what I have in the book. So, and now we're up to 90. And it's not slowing down, really, I don't think.
So you worked at Shipyard before you became a journalist. Heather, you're co-owner of Rising Tide. When did Rising Tide open, and how did you get into it?
Yeah, we opened in 2010, and I'm grateful to work with my husband, who was a home brewer and a bit of an alchemist. He's a scientist and an artist, and brewing just turned out to be the perfect fit for him. And so we opened in 2010 over on Industrial Way, near where Allagash was located. And that's one of the neat things about Maine's brewing community and really craft brewing all across the country is we really rely on our neighbors and our friends in the industry. We treat each other as colleagues and not as competitors. And we are much stronger as a result.
All right. And Lisa, I want to bring your voice here, too. Tell me the story of Austin Street Brewery and your involvement in Austin Street.
Sure. I am the assistant brewer at Austin Street, and the two co-owners, Jake and Will, are good friends, and it started as a homebrew operation in Jake's garage on Austin Street in Westbrook. And so what was Austin Street Homebrew became Austin Street Brewery, and they started on a one-barrel brew system, and about a year ago they upgraded to a 10-barrel brew system, and that's when they hired me. And I help with all of the day-to-day production needs, so brewing, kegging, washing tanks, kegs, everything. I do everything.
Were you a home brewer before you went to work for him?
No. So actually, my background is in biochemistry, and I was a lab research associate at Maine Medical Center Research Institute. And I'd worked in three different labs since graduating college, and it wasn't for me, so I wanted to try something new, and Jake and Will believed that I could bring something important to the table, and I think that's true because I have started our own quality control program since joining a year ago.
Is it significant that we're doing a show on women in brewing? Does it matter? Does having women in brewing change the nature of the craft brewing industry, or so many women in brewing?
I think it's really helpful. There's the two owners, Jake and Will, and we have 100% female staff. And I think we get a lot of work done well and efficiently, and we all work really well together. So that's the only environment I've been in a brewery, and I think it works amazingly.
I think it's really important to have a whole diversity of different voices in any time that you're in a business and in a workplace. It makes the workplace healthier. And makes the relationships among your colleagues, I think, much healthier. So I really love that we have, women in all of our breweries, I think, at this point.
So I was trying to figure out, why is it that craft beer and beer in general has such a dude reputation? And I'm thinking that maybe it's because of the labels we see on beers. Mm-hmm. Some of them have, mermaids with very exposed graphics or they have names like so many beers. Why do so many beers have labels with skeletons or ghouls or creatures?
Beyond me, but.
But it's true, right?
It is true, yeah. It's interesting that you ask about that because John Hall, who's the editor of All About Beer magazine, just wrote an editorial this week, current issue, about sexist beer labeling. And so he's sort of put out a call to action for everyone in the business and the Brewers Association to kind of encourage more inclusivity and kind of gender respect, gender, religion, race. But some of the names, I wrote a few down, I don't even want to say them on the air because they're just too double entendre relating to sex. And I think it's really disrespectful. In fact, I chose to not include a brewery in my book that had a name like that, and all of their labels were, to me, pejorative to women. And I looked them up, and they turned out to be kind of marketing guys who thought it would be fun to get into the beer business, and they were going to have somebody brew the beer for them. So I just said, I don't like it.
Yeah, but even those that aren't sexist and don't have a double entendre, there's Longfellow Ale, Jolly Woodsman, Mean Old Tom, Cannonball. I'm just you know, nothing offensive, but still sort of guyish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think this comes back to what we were just saying about having diversity in the workplace and making sure that there are women's voices that are naming beers in addition to male voices, and that there's just that diversity of perspective. But I also think that people have to vote with their pocketbooks, and when there are things that are pejorative or offensive or over the top in terms of either the art on the label or the name, don't buy it. There's other great beer on the shelf nearby that probably has doesn't have those features, and that'll send the most powerful message that those types of marketing by pun, it's sort of, I don't know, I think a cop out of marketing.
Lisa, who's your buyer? Who buys the beer at Austin Street Brewing?
Everybody. We are self-distributed, so if we don't sell cans either yet, but coming soon this summer. But I'd say the average buyer is a male in their 20s to 30s. But it's really fun when we get women that come into the tasting room, I think.
Okay. And let me ask you, Kate, what do we know? Do we have stats about what the profile of a beer drinker is? Beer drinker nationally in Maine?
Heather's nodding. She may know actual stats, but I think it's women are, if you go into the tasting rooms and the beer bus tours that I've done, it's pretty much equal male, female, and a lot of couples come, all ages. I thought when I got back into doing the second book years later, I was going on a beer bus tour and I was going to talk, and I said, oh, they're going to think, who is that woman? She's old enough to be my mother. Why isn't she home watching cat videos? But there were a lot of people my age and older and young going to, and it was great to see, getting to chat with people and see which beers they liked. But a lot of women.
Heather, you're nodding.
Absolutely. We see just as many women in our tasting room at this point, and frankly, just as many bachelorette group tours as bachelor party tours, I think, at this point. And so I think those demographics about who drinks beer are shifting, and lots and lots of couples enjoy beer together.
It's amazing how many parents take kid-free vacations to Portland, Maine as their their beer getaway weekend.
One of the trends that we're seeing is actually adult children introducing their parents to beer as well. And then, you know, a lot of sort of two generations coming into the brewery and enjoying the beer, because the craft beer movement really does reach all ages above 21.
It's true. My kids were really young when I was starting out, and I was making beer at home, and I fermented it down in the basement. We had an extra kitchen, and my son hated the smell of the beer fermenting, and the kids all complained. And now we go to tasting rooms together and to drink the beer together, and we'll call in, Mom, I had this great beer in New Hampshire, and it's really fun.
Well, you worked for a shipyard a long time ago. I mean, 20 years ago, a long time ago in beer terms.
Yeah.
What was it like then? Were you the only woman there, or was it always very?
No, there were women. We were literally just setting up. So the brewery was all male, if my memory serves. Office staff were women. Salesmen were all male. And then the distributor was a separate company. But I talked to someone about a woman getting hired at the distributors, and they said, no way. So that was the setup.
So there is a change today. Even though it's hard to quantify, it's clearly happening.
Yeah, I think women are getting into all aspects. And there are programs now. UVM, University of Vermont, has a brewing program. They're not doing brewing, but they're doing operations, because there are other schools that do the brewing aspect. But that's becoming more and more prevalent, where I think community colleges might wrap it into their culinary programs. I don't know if we know of any in particular.
Isn't USM doing something new?
Absolutely. Professor Lucy Benedict at USM is a professor of chemistry there, and is also head of their QC2 lab program, which received a pretty large funding infusion to create a beer quality lab at USM. And they are training the next generation of microbiologists and chemists who are going to make sure that we're making fantastic beer at our breweries. They're also offering laboratory testing services to us right now for a fee, as well as classes for folks who work in our breweries so that we can get our lab programs up and running and really make Maine known for the highest quality beer in the country. And so she's another, Lucy Benedict is another woman, great woman in beer in Maine, and has had an enormous leadership role at USM.
Yeah, I only have great things to say about that program. We were fortunate enough to be the first generation of breweries to participate in that quality control class. So that was a huge help.
So how did it work? What happened?
We went in once a month from September to we had the last class last week. And each class lasted about 3 hours long. And they discussed a specific topic. And then there was actually a lab portion where you practiced doing that test, making the media or any other materials necessary. We even made an incubator out of a cooler. And the whole point, too, is to keep it low cost. So that way any brewery can afford to do it and won't see that as a discouraging factor and will be willing to give it a try.
It's so interesting studying up for this program. I had no idea that throughout centuries, women were brewers and that in some countries it was written into law that it was a female-only profession. You all are nodding. And is this sort of part of the whole, I don't know, zeitgeist of brewing, Heather?
I think it is. You know, I think as Kate was describing, in the industrial age, the role of women really changed. And women were not making beer anymore because it was something that was done in factories. And that was a domain of men until very recently. And so I think sometimes we forget how much has changed in terms of women working in all aspects and all facets of our country.
Kate, I think it's so interesting that Maine has this burgeoning brewing industry when for a lot of years, I mean, almost a century, Maine had prohibition.
Mm. Yeah, I think I made a note in my new book, Maine was the first state to enact prohibition. And then I think Dave Geary was the first to open a brewery in Maine post-prohibition. So I said, at least we kind of got in there and changed it once the laws changed. It's interesting. When people ask me which states, because the book covers all of New England, which states seem to be over the top, I'd say Vermont and Maine are just, and I'm not sure why. It could be the quality of life in both of those states. But a little bit of it is the culture. People are ready for good beer here, and they have been for a long time. I was reading about $3 Dewey's opening in 1981, the bar, and they brought in a lot of great beers. And that educated people and got them curious and thirsty for really great beers. And Ed Stebbins, who owns Gritty McDuff, said if $3 Dewey's hadn't opened, we never would have made it because people wouldn't have gotten what we were trying to do. So, yeah, it is the cultures. In the southern New England states, Connecticut and Rhode Island, brewers told me that they were very late to the game. The people, not the brewers, people were dying to brew beer there. Some of them did and went under. But they had corporate headquarters for imports there. So people were drinking those beers and were very loyal to them for many years. And now they're coming around in Connecticut and Rhode Island are following quickly behind.
Interesting. Well, we have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, we'll visit a safe house where refugees from all over the world are waiting for asylum.
I got beaten up so many times. I got arrested so many times. But I soldiered on because I believed in my cause. And what I thought was, Mugabe won't kill me, but I was wrong.
One refugee story. next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
And you can hear the New Yorker Radio Hour Saturday afternoon at 2 or Sunday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
Choices can give us freedom.
It used to be the case that when you went to the supermarket, there was one kind of pasta sauce.
And choices can paralyze us.
At one point, I think I went into a grocery store and discovered 36 different varieties.
And that's just the small stuff.
And most of life is not prepackaged.
I'm Guy Raz. Decisions, 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 and how we make them. Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Saturday at 1 o'clock or Wednesday evenings at 11. Here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking with women in Maine's brewing industry. In the studio with me, Lisa Kellendorfer, who is assistant brewer at Austin Street Brewery in Portland. Heather Sanborn is the co-owner and director of business operations at Rising Tide Brewing Company. And Kate Cohn is a writer and the author of What's Brewing in New England, a guide to brew pubs and microbreweries. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before the break, we were talking about the brewing tradition in Maine, that even though we were sort of the home of Prohibition, there has been a tradition for a while. And Heather, I had to go to a break before you could chat.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I don't think Rising Tide would be here without the great work that D.L. Geary did back in 1986 and without Shipyard and Gritty's, who were early pioneers in Maine, because my dad would come home from work and grab a craft beer actually out of the fridge. It was Geary's or it was Shipyard or it was Gritty's. And so we already had drinkers in Maine who understood craft beer and who were willing to reach for that instead of a Budweiser or a Miller.
And you say that wasn't going on in New Hampshire.
It wasn't. New Hampshire is a very Bud-focused market. They have a Bud brewery in Merrimack, New Hampshire. And so there's loyalty there. And, you know, as perhaps there should be. People work there. But in Maine, it has been a local market for a long, long time.
One of the great things about being older in this business is,
And I'm going to interject and say you don't look very old to me, but maybe compared to the women sitting next to you.
Thank you. Is that I can talk about Carling Black Label, Narragansett. I was driving down here singing the Narragansett jingle, and I said, that is the power of radio, because I used to listen to the Red Sox game with my dad on the radio on a Saturday afternoon, and they would be singing the Gansett jingle. And then I was in the restaurant business going through college and law school, and we were big shots because we were drinking Beck's and Heineken. And so when craft beers came along and they tasted so delicious, it was just like this transformation.
On the line with us, Mia Strong. She's co-founder of Strong Brewing Company based in Sedgwick, Maine, and handles sales for the brewery. Hi, Mia.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us. I understand your brewery is a family affair. Tell me the story of it.
Yes, it's me, my husband, and my son. My husband's been a home brewer for many years. We discovered that microbreweries in the early 90s when we started vacationing in Maine before we moved here, fell in love. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years to figuring out how to live in Maine, we just decided 4 years ago that we needed to go for the dream and open the brewery. And so my husband is the brewer, my son kind of runs the tap room, and I kind of do everything else.
So Mia, let me ask you this: what would you say to a young woman interested in a brewing profession?
Oh, I would say go for it. I mean, the industry has changed so much, and I see it changing every day. There's so many more people coming into it and appreciating it. And, you know, Maine's really setting a bar for inclusiveness. I think that there's always ways to get in, you know. I know sometimes it may seem a little discouraging when you go to a beer fest and there's just a sea of beards, you know. You know, there's just so many great women in the industry, and then just supportive people in general that are welcoming and, you know, ready to help you find your place. So.
Well, Mia, thanks so much. And everybody in the room smiled when you said the sea of beards. So they've seen it before. That's funny. So it's not just as male dominated, but there's a certain facial hair rule, right? Yeah, nodding. Okay, Mia, thanks so much for calling in. Mia's co-founder of Strong Brewing Company based in Sedgwick. She handles the business side there. We're going to go to an email now. This is from Carrie. Oh, excuse me, from Facebook. I'm a former beer snob turned celiac. My husband and I have traveled all over the country in search of good beer and food, including all over Maine. Since my diagnosis, I'm no longer able to join him because of Maine's beer laws that don't allow guest taps in testing rooms. In fact, tomorrow we are heading to New Hampshire breweries because there are several breweries that offer a craft cider option for me. What needs to happen to change this? With 93 breweries in Maine, it seems like a good time to start talking about changing an antiquated law. Heather's raising her hand. The legislator, Heather Sanborn, is raising her hand.
The Maine Brewers Guild has been working on this issue. Right now, there's this sort of very strange rule as it plays out in Maine, where if your tasting room were to get a full license so they could buy other people's beer and wine and sell it on the premises, they would lose their ability to sell beer to go out of that same space, their own beer to go. So many of the tasting rooms in Maine don't operate as brew pubs where you'd have to have a separate space to sell your beer to go, but instead just choose to not have any guest taps. And so we are actually working to change that. The hearing, the public hearing, is on Monday at the State House on our bill that would make it much easier for tasting rooms to also carry other people's beer by getting an additional license to do that in the same space, and would include cider or wine potentially for folks who can't tolerate the gluten in beer.
All right. Good question. We'll go to Waterville and Lillian. Hi, Lillian. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I just want to say that I am the proud grandmother of a woman who is in the brewing business in Maine. She and her husband, Matt, have, I think it's called Templedown Brewery.
Lillian, what do you think of their beer?
Well, I like beer. I'm not a connoisseur at all.
It's Farmington. Tumbledown's in Farmington.
Farmington. Yeah. I was trying to remember the name of the city, and I couldn't remember it. That's what happens when you get in your 90s. You know, you forget things.
Well, Lillian, I'm so glad you called Maine Calling, and thanks for listening. We'll move on to Westport Island and Stacy. Hi, Stacy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was just saying that I own a wine and tea shop in Wiscasset, Maine, and we carry a ton of different beers, but that I came kind of late into the game with the radio show, and not to, like, pull out the gender card, but this is really inspiring to hear all of you women speaking about beer, because everybody I deal with in the beer culture, for me, has always been men, and there seems to be this, like, we know a lot about beer, and it's just really nice to be listening to the show and hearing the three of you talk, you know, so passionately about it.
Thank
so thank you. That's all I really wanted to say.
Okay, thanks, Stacy.
Thanks.
I think a lot of our women who work in a public-facing role in our tasting rooms and our breweries have that same experience where there's some assumption that they must not know about beer because they're female. And we can really break that apart because the women who have worked for us are the best tasters in our brewery and often the most articulate and most knowledgeable about beer.
I don't know any brewer, male or female, who would put someone in the tasting room without educating them to the beer. So I put out, kind of polled the women I knew in the business, and got the major issue was men coming in and asking the men about the beer rather than the women, even if the women were the brewers or knew about the beers. And across the board, that was, even across the country, that was the issue. Just kind of let we know about the beer, so talk to us.
Yeah, there's a huge difference in our tasting room when either just women are working or a woman and a man are working as to who receives the most questions and who answers the most questions. And there's a lot of mansplaining that all of the ladies in our tasting room have to deal with on a daily basis. And I enjoy it when I get to work in the tasting room and get to say, I made that beer that you're about to drink. So I sure can tell you all about it.
We'll go to Anthony calling from Waterville. Hi, Anthony. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Yeah. You know, I go to Austin every Saturday. You know, the Never Ender is probably one of my all-time favorite beers. You know, I go to Bissell Brothers and Foundation. And when I see in line, I see 50% women and 50% men. I don't see this huge male-dominated beer thing, at least in the craft brewery. You know, my family, all the women in my family were very strong. My boss is a woman. My boss's boss is a woman. And I just, have I had my head in the sand the whole time? Because I don't see, like, I see women in the work field everywhere I go.
Anthony, without giving us your exact age, are you in your 20s, 30s, 40s?
I'm 45.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I think in the breweries, I think if Anthony's referring to men and women enjoying the beer together, I think we were saying before that we think it's 50-50, and that's what we've seen. I think it's the industry overall, you know, talking about who has, especially I think in the brewing end, Heather was saying the production end, is still heavily male. But I think that's going to change. Like Mia was just saying, go for it, women. You know, and I think that that mix is a good mix.
Anthony, thanks for calling. We have an email from Kevin. Why is it that there are so few top-quality, non-hop-happy pilsners and lagers brewed in Maine? They come in variety in Europe. Heather?
Yeah, I'll try that one. One of the reasons is that it takes much longer to make a lager than it does to make an ale. And frankly, it's much more difficult. There is no assurance that you're going to nail it every time with a lager. It takes a lot more practice, and there's not a lot of ways to hide any flaws in a lager because they're so clean and crisp.
Sounds like it's a good challenge for a chemist.
Dirigo Brewing is doing all lagers. Isn't he, Tom Bull, down there?
He's doing a lot of lagers, yep.
So he might, I don't know if they're packaging yet, but they're open for, if you want to go down to the tasting room, Dirigo Brewing in Biddeford.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll go to Ben, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a question for Heather. I know you had a seasonal Nikita Imperial Russian Stout, and I was wondering if you could bottle it and sell it year-round. I think that'd be a good move.
Hi, Ben. Ben serves in the legislature with me. I hear you, Ben, and we're working on making that beer a bit more often. It's unfortunately really tough to sell high alcohol dark stouts in the winter, in the summertime in Maine, because people really, change what they drink based on the temperature outside. Not everybody, but a lot of people mm-hmm. do. And that's really the reason that sort of beers ebb and flow throughout the year.
Ben, thanks. All right. Thanks for calling in and joining the conversation. If you'd like to call in and join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Orthopedic Institute of Central Maine, providing joint replacement, spine surgery, and hip fracture care. jointsme.org. Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. Maine Public is seeking an experienced HR professional to lead all the aspects of our human resources functions for our statewide public broadcasting organization. We're looking for an HR director who's passionate about the work and mission of public broadcasting and has deep experience in all aspects of employee and labor relations, benefit sourcing, performance management, and HR compliance. If you or someone you know has the experience and enthusiasm that would complement Maine Public's dynamic and talented workforce, there's more information and details on how to apply at mainepublic.org.
This week on Next, we'll ask whether the job of an ICE agent has changed under the Trump administration.
No, still the same job. The only thing is right now they're actually enforcing the laws they were sworn to enforce instead of just not enforcing the laws.
And we'll ask a Puerto Rican whether she feels American.
Man, you're hitting hard. Sometimes.
Join us for Next from the New England News Collaborative.
And Next comes up following Maine Calling at 2 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the role of women in the beer industry in Maine. In the studio with me, Heather Sanborn, who is co-owner and director of business operations at Rising Tide. Kate Cohn is the author of the book, What's Brewing in New England, a guide to brew pubs and microbreweries. And Lisa Kellendorfer is assistant brewer at Austin Street Brewery. Join our conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. It's been a little while since we've done a show about brewing in Maine, Heather, but I believe on the last show we were talking about really a desire and effort to increase the connection between Maine's craft beer industry and agriculture, that often you have to source things like hops and malt from out of state because just simply not enough is being grown here in Maine. Is that changing at all?
It is changing, but it's going to take a long time. There's a lot of infrastructure that needs to grow up in Maine and in the Northeast in order to react to how quickly craft beer has grown in this area. But we have great opportunities. Barley grows really well in Maine, and we now have a couple of malt houses that are expanding very rapidly so that they can take that barley and convert it into the malt that we need in order to be able to use it in brewing. And we also have a number of hop farms in Maine that are starting to remember how to grow hops. We had a hop growing industry before Prohibition in Maine, and then no one has really grown any commercial scale hop farms in Maine until very recently, since Prohibition.
Lisa, is this a priority for you all? Would you like to be able to be sourcing your ingredients here in Maine?
Oh, definitely. That's very important to Austin Street, is to stay local and to support local businesses. And we brew one beer so far that is made with all Maine-grown barley, and that is our Session IPA Rally that will be coming back this summer. And I think it's really great that I think it was last summer the Brewfest at Thompson Point did a competition amongst the breweries for where the attendees of the Brewfest got to vote for their favorite Maine-made beer. And so I think that really encouraged breweries to use those local ingredients.
All right. Well, we're going to move up to Bangor and Sam. Hi, Sam. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the Rising beer scene in the Bangor brewer area and try to encourage people to come up and check out some of the expanding breweries we have up there. Mason's Brewing, we've got 2 Feet Brewing, Gagan's has been expanding, Friars, and we've also got the Central Street Farmhouse guys helping guys out with the local brew scene. And we also have a new brewery coming up in the Bangor area, Maniacal Brewing, that's going to bring a sour program to the area, which is a rarity in the state. So just want to bring notice to your listeners about what's going on in Bangor, and Bangor is going to do its best to try to rival Portland in the Maine beer scene.
That sounds like a great rivalry. Kate,
Bangor,
you got Bangor
also
Brewers.
Has a beer bus tour there, so you can, if you want to jump on and do a bunch of breweries in a day, or I say a bunch, maybe 3-4, depends on the day, but That's an option, too, if you just want to go up for a day and then explore. But Bangor's going crazy. It's like I live in Waterville. I'm saying, someone please open a brewery in Waterville. We have all these empty mill buildings. And so we have to drive either 1 hour and 10 minutes to Portland or 1 hour to Bangor, or the other ones are 40 minutes. So someone please come on.
Okay, a plea, economic development here on Maine Calling today. Somebody please open a brewery in Waterville. Okay, we're going to go to Phippsburg and Paul. Hi, Paul, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to give a shout out to a brewery in Denver, Colorado, which was started by three women. It's called Lady Justice Brewery, and one of the women is Kate Power, who is a Maine native and a Maine law school grad, and wondered if any of your guests had heard of Lady Justice Brewing.
I certainly have, and I know there are a number of breweries all over the country that are founded by number of ladies working together to found the breweries. That's not always men who are even involved from the start. So,
Paul, thanks for your call.
If any Mainers that go out there skiing might want to check it out.
Oh, thanks for. I'm sure that they appreciate Lady Justice Brewery in Denver. Okay. We're going to go to Veronica, who's calling from Southern Maine. Hi, Veronica. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just want to put a plug in for all the older women that love beer. I'm in my late 50s. I have a friend who's in her early 60s. We get together several times a month and do different breweries. We have a ball. We actually went to Amsterdam and Belgium just to try all the beers, left the husbands at home. So don't underestimate us older ladies.
Hey, Veronica, why don't you invite the four of us along next time? That's just fun.
I'd love to.
Have you all tried the beer bus tours? Have you done that?
We actually were at a brewery a couple of weeks ago down in Northampton, Throwback, and a bus tour came in, and it was a bunch of girls, a bachelor party, and that was the first time we heard about it. So the guy gave us all sorts of information, so that's our next plan.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea because you don't have to necessarily find the designated driver or worry about being behind the wheel. So thanks, Veronica, for your call. We have Amy posted on Facebook, where can someone find a list of the Maine brewery testing rooms times?
Oh, tasting room times.
Josh? Yeah, Josh Christie has been a beer blogger in Maine for a long time and has compiled a list. I don't know where that list lives other than that I've seen it posted on Facebook a number of times looking for edits. So
yeah, we could ask Josh to see if he would mind posting it publicly.
We could probably post it on the Maine Calling Facebook page.
That'd be great. Amy, look out for that. And Josh is a friend of the show, so hopefully he will do that. Quickly, Josh, we're going to go to Mike in Portland. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to say first that my wife is a preferred wine drinker, but I've gotten her interested in beer quite a bit. She loves all our local beers, but she is very partial to the dark beers, and the stronger the better, which is kind of surprising to me. But anyway, I was following up on Ben's call about why no Russian Imperial Stouts in the summer? And I found a solution to that until people brewing it more often. And since it's high alcohol content, it tends to last longer. So I have 40 bottles in my basement waiting for the summer.
And what did you say your address was, Mike? No.
It's a hidden secret.
Well, cellaring beer is a great option, actually. And thanks for only cellaring beer that has a high alcohol content and maybe that darker, richer character that really can last through the winter or through the summer.
Stout is a great pairing with oysters any time of year, but in the summer. Mia Strong was telling me that they had people come in to the tasting room last summer and say, why no stout? And they mixed up their production schedule so they could make a stout to have in the summer. So maybe just voicing those opinions to your brewer might change things too.
We were talking about marketing and labeling earlier in the show. We have an email from William who said he couldn't help his disappointment to read, quote, show us your gritties emblazoned on their delivery truck. Adding to that part of the conversation. Mike in Portland, thanks for your call. I wanted to ask you all about the future of brewing in Maine. Kate, we're talking about these dozens and dozens of breweries. We had the call from Sam talking about what's going on in Bangor. Is there a limit?
I like to quote Bart Watson, who is the staff economist for the Brewers Association. He's going to be in Maine, actually, at the Brew Summit on March 31st speaking. But it's very complicated and technical, but this is what I glean from it, that it's going to be like a pre-prohibition economy where people want to drink locally made beer and they want to go there and try it. So that he seems to think, and I don't know if his opinion has changed recently, but know that the economy can still support this small type of brewery and tasting room and the proliferation of them.
Does the explosion of the craft brewery, the smaller brewery, impact the larger breweries? I mean, we just learned the news that Geary's has been sold, right? Mm-hmm. And that Geary's was already producing less than they used to. I mean, it is sort of the whole economy of the brewing industry in Maine shifting?
I think it's going to be a very competitive landscape. And I don't think that means that there are too many breweries, but I think it means that there will be some that do really well and some that don't do very well, and they'll need to either innovate and refresh and update or change their recipes or their approach, or they, you know, will shrink. And I think that's true in most businesses once you hit that point of critical mass. So.
All right. We'll go to John calling from Wells. Hi, John. Go ahead. Oh, we lost John, but we have our friend Josh Christie. Hi, Josh. You are listening.
I am listening.
Are you going to share your magic list of tasting rooms with us?
Yeah, I wanted to share. I'll post it on the Maine Calling webpage. It's a big spreadsheet, so on the Facebook page. And then it's published twice a year in a free periodical called the Maine Brew Guide, which is available in a lot of the tap rooms.
Okay, Josh, since we've got you on the phone and since you follow this industry so quickly, anything you want to say about the women brewers in this room or how they've changed brewing in Maine?
I think it's been an incredible trend in Maine to watch, and it just speaks well to the scene that we have here in the state, that it's not exclusive, that it's inclusive. And the women you have on the show have just done such great things for the industry. So I'll just end by saying thank you to all of you.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
And Josh has promised to post his information about tasting room times on the TBN Maine Calling Facebook page. Thanks so much, Josh. Let's see here. We've got an email from Nicole. One, UNH is launching a brewing sciences minor. They just hired one of our brewers, Cheryl Parker, to be the brewery manager. So this is from Throwback Brewery. And if you want a fun topic, maybe discuss women beers. Beers created just for women, like High Heel Brewing. Please explain why this is not necessary.
Yeah. There was a beer at one point that was released called Chick Beer, literally, and it had a pink label. And I find that really condescending and unnecessary, because women like all sorts of different kinds of beer. We've already had a couple of people call in on the show today talking about dark beer. Women like hoppy beer, women like dark beer, women like fruity beer, women like bitter beer, women like all sorts of things, just like women like all sorts of food. It's not something that you can generalize. So I really don't think we need beer that's marketed specifically to women.
Okay. We're going to try to squeeze in one or two more calls. Here's Randy in Portland. Randy, if you can ask your question quickly, that would be great.
Yeah, I was just curious about progress of gluten-free beers. I know that I like Omission, and I'm a big beer lover, but since going gluten-free, I haven't been able to find anything local that's, you know, besides the Ixnay.
I'll ask you, Lisa, is it hard to create a gluten-free beer? Or Heather, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I can jump in. There's a lot of labeling rules about what we can actually call gluten-free. And so that's one issue. And then if we don't use barley and try and remove the gluten but use gluten-free grains, it's really difficult to get that flavor profile right.
Okay. Thanks, Randy, for your call. And finally, Dominic in Camden, if you have a quick question, that'd be great.
I do have a quick question. I'm just wondering about all the fruity beers that have been coming on the market lately. Who drinks those?
I take it you don't like them.
No, not a big fan of them.
Well, people must drink them, right?
I'm with you, Dom.
You know, there's so many different iterations of what fruit beer can be. It's hard to generalize. You could have a fruity IPA, but you could also have sour barrel-aged beer that had fruit added. So, you know, it's hard to generalize, but people are really exploring all the different flavors you can make with beer right now.
Oh, Dominic, thanks for your call. So fruity beer is the end of our program today. Thank you all for joining us. To Kate Cohn, a freelance writer and author of What's Brewing in New England, a guide to brew pubs and microbreweries, now in its second edition. Lisa Kellendorfer is an assistant brewer at Austin Street Brewery in Portland. In Portland?
Yes.
Started in Westbrook, now in Portland.
Yes.
And Heather Sanborn, co-owner and director of business operations at Rising Tide Brewing Company and a member of Maine's House of Representatives. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. We had additional help from John Keimel. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Public Radio.